All right. We'll look at two different texts tonight, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and 1 Peter chapter 3. All right, just two verses here in 1 Timothy chapter 2. We'll be looking at verse 9 and 10. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array. Let's turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. Starting there in the first verse, and we'll go down to verse 6. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair or wearing of gold or putting on of apparel, but let it be of the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as you do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, I thank you for your word and ask your blessing now upon the service, Lord. I pray that you'd work. Lord, please control what I say and how I say it, Lord. And I pray, Lord, that your spirit would teach this into the hearts and into the minds of the people here, Lord. That the importance of the truth we're looking at and the reality of it, how to apply it to our life, will just be clear as a bell. So, Lord, I pray that you'd bless and work, Lord. Again, please give me the words to say, Lord, I love you. I pray and ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. The first message, of course, we looked at the importance of your dress in regards to the language of your dress. I tried to demonstrate that you communicate by what you wear. It communicates something. And we went through the different images and pictures where you could see the importance of dress and what you communicate by what you wear. And we also saw that week a very, very important principle, that is that ladies can do something that men cannot do by their dress. All right? That is, they can profess godliness by the way that they dress. I cannot do that by the way that I dress. I can be dressed like this with a nice suit on, the tie on, and I could head to the local store, and nobody's going to say, look, boy, what a godly man. They might guess I'm of a different profession. I'm an accountant. I'm a lawyer. But it's not going to necessarily profess godliness. Now, men, you certainly can hinder your testimony by the way that you dress, all right? You absolutely can do that, but we're not going to be able to dress in such a manner that others would say, wow, there's a Christian. All right? That's not true of ladies. You have the ability, the God-given ability by your appearance to profess godliness. All right? And tonight's lesson is going to try and demonstrate how that's possible. You cannot profess godliness by your dress without modesty. It's not possible. And please understand that the professing of the godliness is given, especially where it's sitting there in 1 Timothy chapter 2, as it's trying to demonstrate the great importance of it. It's not the issues that we're going to be dealing with tonight and here in 2 weeks when we finish up here of this series on dress. These are not optional. They're not. Today they're viewed as optional. I mean, the reality is in our churches as a whole in America, you're not going to hear too many sermons on modesty. You're not going to hear too many sermons on Deuteronomy 22:5 and the importance of gender identity when you dress. Because churches lose people over that nowadays. we have to remember, this is all about the Lord. Remember in the very first, when we started this off, I said, I would ask that you would approach this almost as if you've never heard this before and be like the Bereans and see if it's what the Bible teaches. Agree to follow the Bible. I know it's not what our culture teaches today. I know it's not what the culture of our independent Baptist churches teach today. Although they certainly used to. As did our culture as a whole. But we are in a post-Christian culture today. And I'll deal more with that next week as to why we're seeing the standard that has went by the wayside and how we identify that we're a male and female by the way that we dress. And we'll get more of that next week. And then last week, also in preparation leading up to this, we look at, okay, what has to be covered? All right, what is the minimal amount to cover? We looked at what biblical nudity accounts. Because we think, our view of nudity today is Hollywood-based. We think if we just covered the essentials, if you will, that, all right, I'm not naked now. No, biblically, you are considered naked if anything basically from the neck to your knees was exposed. That was biblical nudity at that point in time. All right. And now, so what we're going to do is we're going to focus on biblical modesty tonight. Now we have others. These, by the way, we have revamped the website. The sermons are online, and we're actually getting feedback from some of those messages that are online, especially the series on dress. I have a poem here written by Jesse Atkins. Remember the Atkins family? That was members here several years ago. Back when I heard, they were members here. They're now in Tennessee. They have I don't know how old Jesse is, I guess 16, 18 years old. Does that sound about right? And she wrote a poem this week about it. I'd like to read that. It's called Mirror, Mirror. She wrote this after listening to the first night's message on Your Dress Communicates a Message. It says, Mirror, Mirror on the wall, does this look honor God at all? Mirror, Mirror, please do say, does this my dress God's love portray? Mirror, Mirror, oh do tell, does it say I'm for sale? Mirror, mirror, grant my request, does this give to God my best? Mirror, mirror, look and see, do I show true purity? Mirror, mirror, one last plea, does this show Christ in me? She got it. She got it. Ladies, the importance of your dress, it cannot be understated. And I hope to demonstrate that tonight as we look at modesty and what happens when you're immodest to men. Okay? So we're going to take a look at this tonight. We're going to cover this, try and cover this in a few different areas. And again, this is a subject that isn't touched much. It is as if, I think I mentioned this last week, it is as if this idea of our gender identity in our dress and modesty is basically become a sacred cow. It's not to be touched. All right? But that's not biblical. I would not be doing my responsibility as a pastor if I was to purposely avoid that because it's not comfortable in our current culture. And the reality is a lot of people just don't know. I've had several people come up to me and said, I didn't know. I've never, and that's true. A lot of people have never heard a lot of this before. Again, the need for modesty goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden, which we looked at last week when man sinned. One of the immediate results of sin was it marred, basically, the interaction, if you will, between male and female. They immediately recognized a need for modesty after sin occurred. So it affected, when sin came into the world, you know, that need to cover up was recognized immediately. The relationship between male and female was affected. And it caused a need to be covered up. It produced a need for modesty. Now, what is modesty? Modesty in itself covers not, as we read in our scriptures, it covers not just your appearance and the clothes you put on, but that those clothes should be reflecting your heart. All right? Here in 1 Peter chapter 3, it really is a really good section here, when it's talking about the adorning of our apparel. Now, a lot of people say that means you can't wear makeup, you can't wear gold. Doesn't mean that at all. Watch, let's go to verse 3 here. I do want to cover that. That's not what this message is about tonight. That could be a whole other sermon in and of itself. It says, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, of wearing of gold, or putting on of apparel. All right, notice there the putting on of apparel. You're supposed to wear clothes. All right, what he was driving at there, the same problem we have in our culture today, and I'll get to this more a little bit, it was in the idea of not just modesty and covering up the right way, but also that it's not a fashion statement that you're trying to make as you're in competition with this world. All right? You are to reflect godliness. That is the most important. When I finish this up, I'll give several questions to ask yourself when you're going to purchase clothes. All right? Or you're going to put your clothes on for the day, but we'll finish up with that. So when we deal with modesty, number one, character is involved. It deals with the hidden man of the heart, a meek and quiet spirit, sobriety, self-control. And I'll talk more about that in a little bit as well. So it starts with your heart. It starts with your character. The idea of modesty should be in your character, and it should be then demonstrated by your clothes. Modesty is an attitude that starts in the heart and needs to reflect itself in our dress. And again, the message we are to carry with our dress is not how fashionable we can be. It's how much God has changed your life. We are to dress to reflect. As we see in 1 Peter 3:3, as I just mentioned, it even covers again the fashion trends. It's not trying to look like the cover of a Vogue magazine. That's also part of the modesty here. We're going to get to the main part of it here and how it affects men when you're immodest. But that's not the only part of modesty. All right? If you're trying to demonstrate, your society or your position and the greatness, what you are in the culture by the way that you're dressed, you're missing it as well. That's not being modest in your appearance. Modesty became a serious issue by the end of the 1950s in the United States of America. Things began to change drastically. All right. Do you remember in the first night I quoted from an interview from a lady named Mary Quant, Quant. Remember that? She was the inventor of the designer of the miniskirt. She introduced that, as well as different lines of clothing and whatnot. Here's a quote, though, that I left off. And one of her purposes in her clothing line she was putting out. And please keep in mind, her philosophy, it carried over into the fashion world entirely. All right? Where do I have that quote at here? Yeah. She said she wanted to switch the focus. She grew up in a time when modesty was commonplace among ladies. She said she wanted to switch the focus from the ankles to the hips, and I'm going to be nicer here, and to the chest area. That's what she wanted to do by her clothes. She wanted to switch it. And really the focus at that time, she missed the point. When you have a lady who is modestly dressed, understand this, the attention is not drawn to her body, the attention is drawn to her face. But when you begin to lose modesty, that changes. The man will not be drawn to your face, he'll be drawn to your body. Modesty in dress carries the meaning of not drawing attention to oneself. Now, go back to 1 Peter. What we're going to have to do here is we are going to look at a very important word here in this sermon and the next sermon, and that is the word apparel that is used in 1 Timothy chapter 2. It is very important. Now, please understand, I am getting ready to use what the Greek word is behind it. I certainly do not think Greek corrects the English, all that stuff. We're just fine with the King James Bible. But this is going to give us a greater understanding right now as we're going through modesty and what it means. The word here for apparel is a word called katastole in Greek. It's made up of two different words. It's a combination of two words, kata and stole. All right? Stole carries the meaning of a robe. It can be applied to masculine or to feminine. It's used 8 times in the New Testament alone. For instance, I'll give you another verse where it is used. This would just be justole, not katastole, but justole. When the prodigal son returned home, And he said, go get the robe and put them on him. That would be the word distole by itself. Now, it changes the meaning of it when you put kata with it. All right? That has the idea of the meaning of dress. It is feminine in nature. Flowing. Something that goes down at that point in time. You'll hear commonly preachers say the word means a flowing garment. And that would be correct at that point in time. All right? But it has. But it's only used, here in the New Testament, it is used right here in this verse, and it is something that is applied to the female, not to the male. So it does deal with, and we'll get to this next week, we'll do a gender identity, and the difference with trousers and whose garment that is, and the importance of skirts and dresses. Because this is feminine here. So now you're the ladies' apparel, but we're just covering the modesty side this week. Next week we'll get to the gender identity side of this. So this was to be a long flowing garment that was, of course, going to be female. It's something that would belong to the female. It wasn't the stole, which you hear a lot of preachers like to use to get around the standard today. We'll get into those distinctions next week when I try to answer the different arguments against the standard today. There's a lot of crazy ones out there. So it's made up of these two words, and together it means a garment that should be let down, literally, when you look back, in other words, a dress. All right? A dress, of course, that was to be modest apparel. This garment would in no way conform to the body. You have to understand, ladies, what happens, and I'm going to try and demonstrate that here, even from a worldly sense, let alone the biblical sense here in just a minute. When you are dressing, your clothes need to flow. All right? That's modest. If your clothes are conforming to your body, all right, I don't want to be crude here. I want to be as clear as I can without being crude at all. But if they are coming around your backside in a sort of cupping, if it's drawing attention to your dress area because it's not flowing as it should, you're going to pull the attention of men. It will happen. All right? It has to flow. And there's different things you can do. Again, as you're heading out and you have the garments, it does not need to be conforming to your figure. All right? It has to be flowing. And of course, husbands can help out with this, dads can help out with this to see, I don't know how many times that Marianne will come to me and ask, is this all right? And I have a joking way I do it. If I think it's something improper, I go, yes, that looks really good. And she knows to go change at that point in time. And you can do different things to cover it up. You have to be careful. Listen, I appreciate it. There's a lot. Some of the ladies here, you see such demonstrations of modesty. I appreciate it when you go to bend over to pick something up, the hand going to the chest. And nowadays, it can be hard to find. You got to look out for those low-cut things. Those are improper. And so nowadays, I see a lot of ladies, and that's good. You'll find another garment to try and help cover that up. Let me give a little bit of help with that. I'm a guy. Make sure that if you're doing that, that garment itself isn't drawing attention to you. You understand what I'm saying? It cannot be cupping. It should not be conforming. You will pull man's attention at that point in time. Remember, your clothes are given as a covering. They're not given to reveal. If they are revealing your body, that would only happen if it's conforming. You are missing the whole point of why God clothed us. It was given. If your clothes are coming across any way conforming to your body, you're not covering it. You're revealing your body at that point in time. let's see. It goes on with the attitude with it. It talks about the shamefacedness. This dealt with by your appearance and with your attitude, that it demonstrates, one, you're in awe of God. All of God. A bashfulness. an idea that you recognize that your body is something special and that it is only for your husband. Again, in stressing that garment, the catastole, it used the word modest. Make sure it's not drawing attention to yourself. You must make sure, as I mentioned briefly last week, that your modesty is not just in the standing position. I remember when we were back here, and it does show the idea, but you know, I mentioned it last week, you can have that, the skirt shuttle, trying to get the skirt down, skirt shuttle. And of course, that shows that you want to be modest. I appreciate that. But I remember we were back here on furlough. We were here in Alaska, and there was something taking place, and me and Marianne were here with there were several church families all around. And we were together for several hours on this day. And I'm sitting there as that night's going on, and my wife had a skirt that when she stood up, it pretty much covered her knees. But when she sat down, I've watched her doing that little shuttle thing. Oh, and it was bugging me. And we got in the car when we're leaving there. I said, this is changing now. All right? It needs to be covered even when you're sitting down. Now, I understand this. We go through this ourselves. It's not easy finding apparel that can do that. But it can be done. Your dress should not say self, pride, money, lust. It should say purity, humility, moderation, and godliness. The question should not be, do these clothes look good on me, but do these clothes look godly on me? Now, the importance of modesty. Why is it so important to be modest? Now, let me say this right now. Men, you are absolutely accountable to God for your own thoughts. I don't care if you're in Walmart, where you're at. You are accountable to God for your own thoughts. You will not have an excuse before the Lord because you let your mind or your eyes wander because an immodest lady walks by you. All right? So you are. This doesn't excuse your sin, in other words. Now, ladies, at the same time, the Bible says we're not to be a stumbling block to each other. What I hope to see to demonstrate by this is how much you can be a stumbling block to others. And you can see where the standards are even going. You know, I mean, when I've been back in the States this time, I don't think that was true on any of our other furloughs. They have this new type of garment out, and we'll get into that. I call it second skin pants. All right? I think they're called the yoga pants or tights. I'm not sure. They might as well just call those things second skin. In 1 Peter chapter 3, part of the modesty of her character and in her appearance would help in the if we're talking in the situation there is a lady who is married to a lost husband. Somebody who is lost. And what he talks about here is the importance. Not, of course, your character is a big part of this. All right? With the character change that God does, with a meek and quiet spirit, and following the godly examples that we have in the Bible of godly ladies. And that, of course, coming over to the apparel side, how it has the ability to assist in conversion. There's a great importance of it. We saw that in the first message in this, and how the Apostle Paul related the importance of your apparel in the proclaiming of the gospel, how it professes godliness. Modesty is important in our day because of the wildfire that we have in our sexual sins that exist right now. It's protection. It keeps a culture and people from being driven by the lust of the flesh. Men are sight-driven. There is great danger in immodesty. I was reading an old book from the 19th century on immodesty this week, and I took one quote from it from the message that I really liked. Here it is. It says, let's see, where am I at here? It said, it's talking about ladies who just by your dress. He said he was trying to make a point of how important it is to stay modest. And I really like the quote. He had said, "You are like a lighted candle walking through a room filled with..." I know my mind. I thought, he is exactly right. Ladies, you need to understand the power of your dress and the power that your appearance has over men. Guess what? The number one, this should be easy, for a single issue of one magazine, there's one that dominates every year, that outsells every other, nothing comes close to it. Could anybody guess what issue I'm referring to? Sports Illustrated, which edition? Swimsuit edition. I remember being 10 years old, and for Christmas, I was given a Sports Illustrated subscription. Love sports. I can still see the images in my mind right now when the swimsuit issue came out. Understand the power of your appearance. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7, I'm going to start in verse 10. And really, I think that, some do understand, but I don't believe the majority of ladies really understand the power that they have over men based solely on appearance. All right, but let's look at this in the Bible. It says, "And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart." Again, so there was something appealing about her appearance. Her attire did not conceal, it revealed. And that had great power. Let's see the result of it. We can skip that about the different, about her attitude, loud and stubborn. It's, in other words, it's not meek and quiet. Verse 12, "Now she was without, now in the streets, and lieth wait in every corner. So she caught him and kissed him within impudent face, and said unto him, I have peace offerings with me this day. I have paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linens of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loaves." And then it goes on, it talks about that. Verse 21, "With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him." Verse 24. Is that right where I want to get to right here? Yes. "Hearken unto me now, therefore, O you children, and attend to my words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths." Now this is the verse I want to get to. "For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death." The reason why I'm reading that text is to demonstrate the power that a woman has with her body. Many strong men have been slain by her. Ask David. That was a man after God's own heart. Now, to demonstrate this more, let's go to a secular source for this. I remember reading this when it first came out. I believe it was around 2009. Princeton. They didn't do this from a Christian standpoint. They certainly weren't independent Baptists when they did this. And the results they found, I'm going to read their wording, they were shocked. This was a study they did on modesty at Princeton University. All right. All right. They did different brain scans. How they did their survey was this. They took men, And they were going to show them images for less than a second. I believe about 2/10. Very quickly. Different images. The comparison was going to be some women were going to be modestly dressed and some women were not going to be modestly dressed, to bikini clad. All right? No outright nudity, as Hollywood would put it, but definitely by biblical standards. It was going to be immodest versus modest dress. They wanted to see, and again, they had all their head all hooked up to brain scans. They wanted to see what different parts of the male brain were activated based on the images that they saw. The results were incredible. When men saw the women who were immodestly dressed, let's see, how do they word that? They associated those women with first-person action, such as I push, handle, grab, instead of third-person forms, such as she pushes, she handles, she grabs. They associated, I'm reading from their study, they associated fully clothed women, on the other hand, with third-person forms, indicating these women were perceived as in control of their own actions. The females who they tested in this just had no bearing on them whatsoever. So in other words, understand what they're saying here. When a immodest woman, when that came up, and would be there just for a very short time, and that's important for another part of the study. The part of the brain that activated on an immodest woman, it would the same brain that if they would show a hammer, a tool, something the man would use. Is what was activated. That's what lit up. Something the man would use. It was not the part of the brain that gave to the lady an identity as a human. One researcher referred to it as dehumanizing women. When it was somebody, in other words, that was modestly dressed, the part of the brain of the man that acted, remember, this is just these images were just going quickly. They're not having time to dwell on this. But when a modest woman was there and in her appearance, the part of the brain that lit up was showing respect under her for her own self. And in a shocking finding, some of the men studied show no activity in the part of the brain that usually responds when a person ponders another's intentions. This is very important. As we're talking back and forth and as people, and one of the charts actually had pictures of the part of the brain that would activate it, it would show it. All right, there's a part of the brain that's usually active when we're dealing with each other. That part of the brain, this is amazing, completely shut down when they saw an immodest woman. It wasn't there. It shut it down. The only part that was active was that part to use. That's what activated in the man's brain. This is interesting. Yeah, the images were shown for 0.2 seconds. What was amazing was the ones that were best remembered by the men when they were asked questions after what they saw were their immodest ones. And what the researchers determined, I like how one fellow put it, he said it was like a stain on the brain. That image, because it's in a different part of the brain was being active, stayed there. Get this, they could not remember what their face looked like. They could remember specific details of what their body looked like. And it stayed. You know, you heard different preachers mention from the pulpit how you'll never get those images out of your mind. Here's the science backing it up. Again, the image literally stayed on the brain. They didn't get it out. I'm just going through this to see what I really need to get into from here. Again, this is just more how the brain activity with the immodest, women who were dressing modestly, down to bikinis, they did not even look at them as humans with thoughts and intentions with the immodest women. Think about that. And here was their conclusion. I'm going to quote them. This guy's not a pastor. He's not a preacher. Here's what the conclusion from Princeton. Women should be aware of how they are perceived when wearing provocative clothing. Another quote for them. Think of what we read in Proverbs 7. Here's a quote. Many men make foolish choices because of sexual attraction. This is coming from that study. Women, your worth is not based on your body. It is based on your soul. You are growing up in a culture that only places value on your body. Therefore, that's what you're trying to demonstrate and show. In a man's mind, listen to me, you're not going to find true love. He's not even going to think of you as a person. He's going to think of you as how he can use you. Look at Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. Let's see. Again, this is referring to, think of the quote that how men make really bad decisions. It's talking about here, verse 3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, and her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldst ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her. Come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thy honor unto others and thy years unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger, and thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction? And my heart despised reproof. This is dealing, of course, with a man who has fallen, where he makes those horrible choices based on what he sees. Ladies, what I'm asking you to understand is the power of your appearance and how it affects men. How it affects the young men in our church. How it affects those as you leave your home. There's great power in it. And listen, God, understand, God designed you. God did design it this way. This wasn't a surprise to God, but He set this up to be right within marriage so that the provocativeness that you cause on a male comes after you've already established a relationship with a male based on love, God-centered. And then God gave it as pleasure in the marriage of how it would activate the man when he is with you after you're married, come wedding night. And for the night after that, the basis of the relationship is already in place. The love is already there. And now it can be used as a source of great pleasure and adding to the intimacy that takes place between a husband and a wife. And it can be a great thing. But we live in a sexually charged culture. No wonder fornication is rampant. It's everywhere you look. The magazine covers and stores, they're everywhere. It's keeping men constantly focused. The side of their brain that is able to react with women as human beings is shut down. And listen, ladies, men will tell you whatever you want to hear. Whatever you want to hear to get what they want. They'll tell you whatever you want to hear. They'll be very believable. But there's only one thing they're after. Let me try and give this illustration, if you will. Bear with me. I want to try and demonstrate to the ladies what immodesty has effect on a man. Let's try and reverse this a little bit. All right? Ladies, let's say that a man comes up to you and whispers, you're beautiful in your ear, and kisses you gently on the neck and then walks away. Would you not go berserk? Would you not, whoa, what are you doing? You know the potential that has. And yet you're immodest as a greater can cause a man to fall in a much greater way. I would ask that, of course, it's not an asking, as the Bible says, whether you're male or female, as we do go to clothe ourselves, to put apparel on, to cover up, as God intended from back in the Garden of Eden, that our clothes were given as a covering, to cover our nakedness, and that God knew the power that the relationship between male and female was marred, so He gave unto the ladies the necessity of a flowing garment that would not pull the attention of a man until that couple was married. So as we finish this, I would like to try and give some help on some good questions to ask yourself when you're going to purchase clothes, to get dressed. But here are some. Number one, does it break the biblical standard of lawn and flowing? Does it break the biblical standard of lawn and flowing? And there's different things you can do. I mean, nowadays there are different garments and you know, ladies are all different. You can do different. You can have, there's different layers of clothing to scarves. There's different things you can use to help with your modesty. Does it reveal? Again, clothing is given to cover up, to conceal, not to reveal. Again, if you're married, ask your husband. Husbands, get involved in this. If you're not, ask your dad. I mean, dad, be involved in your teenage daughter's lives. Let them know, listen, you can't go out in that. In other words, be a parent. Second question here, will it promote godliness? Will it promote godliness? What will you be saying by wearing this outfit? And really, it's also amazing, can I hit this too, how much our culture today has dressed down. I go to get on an airplane, there's people in pajamas. You go to Walmart, people are literally, we're at Walmart, I did some Christmas shopping, I'm standing there, there is a lady in pajamas in front of us at the self-checkout. I think as Christians, there's something wrong with that. Our clothes... Stop laughing. Our clothes should, it should demonstrate godliness. Please do not go out in your pajamas. But it's the fact. That's not our standard for what we wear. Remember, we are a walking testimony for Jesus Christ. Do you reflect Him or show yourself? Third question here. Why do I want to purchase or wear this? Why do you want to wear that day? All right. Is this to please God or draw the attention of some man you know? Why do you want to wear that? Right, look for your motivation behind it. And lastly, I think it's wise to consider this when you're getting dressed. How will my appearance affect others? How will my appearance affect others? We very much live in a self-centered generation today that no way wants to ask this question. Today the feminist screams, it's my body, I'll do what I want to. The average evangelical Christian today says, it's my liberty, I'll do what I want to. Yet the Bible says, for you are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are His. Please, do think of others when you dress. Will this cause a man to stumble? Will I cause a young girl to desire the way of the world? will I cause envy. The Christian life is a life that is lived for others. As we live to serve Christ, your life will be about others. Modesty covers your character, and then your heart, that the godly heart should be reflected in our dress. Again, I think one of the biggest problems, one of the problems we have today on this subject is simply ignorance. We've never heard, seen anything like this. You know, I remember, and I'll probably bring this up again next week, but I remember when I was 17 years old and went to this big pastor's conference, and I heard that preacher get up there and say how the first time his daughter had ever kissed a man was on their wedding day. I was like, what? Completely foreign to me. I'm like, that is insane. That's crazy. I mean, I've been kissing girls since I was six. I never heard of such a thing. It was so foreign to me. I was like, please, what's he talking about? The church I was a member of, the pastor would say openly from the pulpit, you can kiss your girlfriend goodnight. There's nothing wrong with that. So I did. And then I hear him say, you shouldn't touch a woman till you're married. And what you know, he had a verse for that. And I thought, it's there. But I had no idea because of the culture that I grew up in. It wasn't, I believed different because I was in rebellion. I believed different because I was ignorant. And so that's what I hope to do with this, is to give some knowledge as to the biblical standard for dress. And yes, it absolutely applies today. Truth does not change. It does not. If something was true 1,000 years ago, it's true today. It doesn't change. Truth is absolute. It doesn't change. All right, with every head bowed and every eye closed.